Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour for January 7th, 2021. And what an insane world we are entering. That's all I can say. But one thing I'm trying to promote, irrespective of anything in politics or world situations or food situation, which is going to get dire soon for a lot of people, is education. Losing a generation where I was on John Moore's show Wednesday morning, I always am, and I made this comment about losing a generation to because of the COVID and, you know, missing a year of education. John said we've missed 30 years or 40 years of education, and that the SAT scores, in spite of kids getting coached on how to pass the SAT test, the scores have actually gone down over the decades to the point where it's rather pathetic. But the thing that we have now is a complete break in the chain of education. And in a sense, I think it's a good thing, because education had become a very controlled, let me just put it that way, and controlled by people who have an agenda. It's a communist, atheist agenda. And it started a long, long time ago. I've talked about this. Carl Sagan, in 1979, set the agenda for that education from the pinnacle of knowledge, so to speak, the astronomy people at Cornell or Ivy League schools, who got together and decided what the theories should be that should be accepted, and then rolled it into the textbooks, and it's been that way ever since. So that's what has to be broken, because there's a standard line of basically misinformation about who we are, about the history of man, about the history of science, the history of the planets, what the planets are, where they came from, what comets are. You know, I could go on and on. The more recent history of man, everything they're teaching could not possibly be true at all. But if you read the Silent Weapons for a Quiet War, you see that one of the things, their main target is education. They want to break the youth from being able to logically deduce things, to figure things out for themselves, to read something and go, hey, this doesn't make sense. They want to block that. They want kids to learn rote series of facts, unrelated facts, and that's knowledge. And that's, in a sense, what Wikipedia is. It's a unrelated set of facts that are written by certain people that are tier two scientists or in many cases, tier three or tier four scientists. And the devil take anybody who has a rational explanation for anything. They only want their story told. So the bottom line is parents have to educate their kids. So anyway, I have to take a direction. We all wasted a lot of time in 2020 with the COVID thing, with the political thing, with all kinds of other issues. So I'm taking the tack that we all have to move on with our lives. We can't wallow in this mire anymore. And so I'm going to be talking about education a little bit. I'm going to be talking about the theoretical aspect of building what I do, the wind energy systems, etc. And that's something that's very important, because there are people out there sitting there thinking, I would like to get one of these wind systems, a wing generator, or some kind of, I've had people ask for just the backup generators, the LP or the diesel generators. And so people are looking for different things. But I want to read an email that I got, and basically it says, I would like to buy a unit. And so I'm like, wow. This person does not understand what it's going to take for me to actually talk to them. The wing generator, for example, comes in eight different models, 8 different sizes. And then you have the complication that the middle sizes, the 25 kilowatt, the 50 kilowatt, and the 100 kilowatt sizes, can be either on or off grid. And there's a reason for that. It doesn't make much sense to have a 10 kilowatt generator on the grid. It's not enough power to mess with. And so trying to create the electronics to go on grid with something that small, just a duplication of effort, because understand that the electronics that plug into the grid are totally, totally different than the electronics that would plug into an off-grid system to power your cabin or house or ranch or whatever. And so what I'm going to try and do here is outline some of the details so people have a little bit better idea. So my response to somebody that writes in and goes, gee, I'd like a wind generator for my house, and the first question I ask is, do you have zoning issues? Do you have a zoning situation where you're not allowed something over 35 feet high, which is most cities, most residential districts? You're not going to put one there. There's a different solution for those people. That is to have one large wing generator that powers the whole community, and that's off where you won't see it. It's off in the distance, and people could literally buy into shares in that and have distributed energy. They would be buying energy from the generation plant. They could possibly own a piece of that and get their electricity for a lower price. So those are all things in the future. But I'm just talking about the small ones where they are for a remote facility. So typically you would be out in the country, you would have a farm or a ranch, and this is something I've noticed too, is that people who just want to be off the grid, and that's their only motivation, they don't really have a commercial operation, they don't have a return on investment, it's called ROI, they don't have a return on investment that's going to pay them back. Of course, they're not going to pay their electric bill because they're going to have electricity from the wing generator. But typically, they would stay connected to the grid, or some would be totally off the grid. That's fine, too. But just not paying your electric bill in most parts of the country, or even in most parts of the world, even if they have high electric rates, you're not going to see a return on investment in the first 8 to 10 years. The people that see a return on investment are the people that have an industrial need for electricity. They have a farm of milk cows, 200 cows. They have a ranch where they do a lot of welding. They do a lot of machine work. And they're running up an electric bill of $5,000 to $10,000 a month. Okay, now there's somebody that has a return on investment. If you're not paying out $5,000 to $10,000 a month for electricity, that adds up pretty quick. That's $120,000 in a year. That's in 2 years, $240,000, and you can get yourself a really big wing generator for that amount of money. But here's the thing also. Many things have to be matched up here. Are you going to use batteries? Are you going to be completely off-grid? On-grid systems do not use batteries. It's, like I say, a completely different set of electronics that hook into the grid, and when the grid goes down, you're not going to have backup power. That's where the backup generators, the diesel or the liquid propane backup generators come in, because if the grid goes down, then you have that you can work with. So, and things can get more complicated. You could actually set it up where the wing generator would then assist the diesel or LP generator in a system where the grid went down. But there again, that's another layer of complication, because you have to totally disconnect from the grid all of that equipment and turn it around and make it work in a different manner. So now the reason I'm explaining this is because imagine I get an email and a guy goes, I'd like to buy a system. And it's like, okay. So what my response to that is, I have a questionnaire that I send out to people, and it's online, so you don't have to just email me and I send it to you. You can go online and download the questionnaire. But the first thing to do is to spec out, you know, identify the person, the land that they want to put this on. Are they the owners? Establish that. Establish the electrical usage that they've had, the historical electrical usage that they've had. Anything that they want to add to the system in the future, like three-phase pumps or hot water heaters that are electric or electric heat, things that cost a lot of electricity, we have to identify and then look at, like, say, electric car charging station would be another one that would take a lot of electricity. And by the way, let me just stop for a minute here. By this point, a lot of people are going, well, I'm not going to buy one of these. That's not right for me. Why should I listen to this show? And the reason is because people have a complete misconception of alternative power, and they have a complete misconception of how much power we use that comes from the electric generating station. I was on a show, and which show was it? It was the Coast to Coast show the other night. I was on, what night was that? The December 30, the night of December 30th, Coast to Coast AM. I was the second two-hour guest. There's 4 hours, so there's the first two-hour guest, and I was the second 2 hours, the end of the show. But a woman called in, and she said, there's a way to make electricity that they're working on that grows in a petri dish. It's kind of like a mold or something. And I said, you know, you don't understand. When you have train loads of coal that go down to the coal-fired power plant, or you have nuclear power and all of the energy that comes from nuclear, even though that's a horrible source of energy, or the natural gas where you have a pipeline that's feeding into the boilers 24/7 to burn natural gas to create electricity, people just don't have a clue. You know, thinking about a little petri dish with a little bit of mold growing in it, replacing a train load a day of coal coming into a power plant, or not one train load, but 10 train loads of coal coming in, constantly running day and night, back and forth, two sets of tracks. I have a good video on my webpage that shows this going on. I was driving, I think it was out in the middle of Wyoming. It was certainly one of the plain states, and I came up across this bridge, and underneath the bridge were two sets of tracks, and going down the train tracks was a coal train. It must have been 1,000 cars long. It was huge. It was long, and each car was full of coal. And then eventually what I did is I took my video camera, and I just set it up on the edge of the bridge. There was no traffic there. You could see for 10 miles in both directions. And if somebody were coming up the bridge, they would see me and just drive around. Not a traffic hazard. So anyway, I filmed this train. And then eventually another train came the other way. So I filmed that train also. The train coming the other way was empty. And these trains are going all day and all night to feed the electric power stations. I think it was in Wyoming where I was at that time. But anyway, okay. The point is, people just don't have an idea of how much electricity it takes to power your house. How many of those coal train cars are you using to power your house? And another point I want to make is that since the electricity generation is about 20% efficient, after all of the inefficiencies have been subtracted and allowing for the Carnot cycle, which maximum you're going to get about 32% energy out of a heat generation system, where you're generating heat by some means, converting it to steam and then converting that to electricity. The maximum efficiency is going to be about 33%, but in reality, you're getting down to around 20%. So that means for every 10 cars loaded with coal, 8 of them are being burned and go right into the atmosphere right now, and only 2 of those cars are actually generating electricity because of the Carnot cycle. Most of that heat is going up, and then they can recover some of that in a secondary process. But that's the amount of energy that you have to duplicate if you're going to replace the grid energy that you're using, even on an average house. So imagine a farm or a ranch that's paying $10,000 to $20,000 a month. Some of them could easily pay that much a month for electricity. Imagine paying $20,000 a month for electricity. In 1 year, that's $250,000. So those are the people that have an incentive to buy a wing generator. They have a return on investment. But why is this important for you people to know? And that is because replacing the amount of energy that we use is a Herculean task. It's a huge issue. It's a huge amount of energy. But the thing about using the wind is that, and this is over solar also. Solar is about 20% efficient. So 20% of the light hitting a solar panel, there's some that are a little more efficient now. But the ones that are out in the field are about 20% efficient, actually less. But let's just give them the benefit of the doubt and say 20%. And the other 80% of that is going off as heat in the atmosphere. So solar is no better than coal or nuclear or natural gas as far as heat pollution going into the atmosphere. The only source of energy that does not pollute on that level is wind. And you'd say, well, what about hydro? Well, hydro does a lot of damage because you got to destroy a tremendous amount of land to make that dam. And then, of course, you get other benefits from hydro because you have this big lake. But what if it goes dry, like happened in recent years, like in the big western reservoirs, Lake Mead and those where they literally went dry? Then you're without any power from that huge facility that was built in, what, the 1930s or something. Okay, so anyway, wind is the only source of energy that is truly renewable. And what I mean by that is if you use wind energy today, it doesn't take away from the wind energy that will be there tomorrow and the next day and the next day. It's renewable in that the wind is going to be there every day. But we just use way too much energy also. But the point I'm trying to make here is how much energy people actually use. How many of those coal train cars full of coal have to burn so that you get your electricity? Okay, so back to what people don't understand. So part of my time is I'm expecting to waste time with people who write in and say, I'd like to buy a system. Okay, and the first thing I try and get to is, do they have money? Do they have a clue about how much money this will cost? And do they have any clue about how much electricity they're going to need? And do they want to be completely off the grid? Do they want to be grid dependent? Do they want a generator, backup generator? Are they going to use batteries in an off-grid scenario? All of these things come into play. And so and that determines the kind of order, the kind of combinations of equipment. And I'll be very clear with you about something. I've been around the alternative energy industry for literally decades. I've dabbled in it in various ways. And but I've also tracked the industry, solar and wind, etc. And the people who are in this industry are trying to sell a product. Let me just put it that way. The people who are solar, and let me give you an example. When I was working on the XPRIZE project, I had a 50-kilowatt inverter, and I needed some fuses that were 480-volt plus, so typically 600-volt, and could handle 50 kilowatts, and a circuit breaker, like a fuse. And so I went up to the local solar store and I said, do you have like a 50 kilowatt fuse, you know, that will handle that 480 volts? And they said, oh, you mean 5,000, you need a big one. I said, no, I need 50,000. And they looked at me like I was the man from the moon. So the whole point is that the standard industry out there of solar and small household and farm and ranch, solar and any other types of what you might call alternative energy. There really is not a market out there. The three-blade wind people left the home market a long, long time ago. They did not have a product. It was too expensive. There was no return on investment. They didn't work. They had all kinds of problems. And so they really abandoned that whole market, which I've come in to fill. It was like a big vacuum there. And the wing generator is more efficient. But the whole point here is that people have to understand that if you are going to replace the energy that you get from the grid, you have to buy equipment that is sufficiently large, sufficiently robust to fill that void. And so people simply don't have a clue what that's going to take. And part of the problem here is that the solar industry, say the Elon Musk Solar City, you know, you come out and put 10 or 15 panels on the rooftop and people go, wow, I really got independent energy now. And they don't. They might put even a solar, like a lithium-ion battery, a Tesla Powerwall, they call them. They might put one on the wall, or you could even maybe put two. But the average house it's only going to run the average house maybe overnight. By morning, your batteries are going to be dead, and your sun energy that comes from the solar now has to recharge those batteries before they'll operate again and before your solar is going to be useful as far as powering your house. And I've seen videos of people, they put, you know, a lot of money, you're talking $60,000, $80,000 into a fairly decent, I wouldn't call it a decent size, but certainly decent amount of money. And they thought that they were really going to have something where they'd be able to go off the grid. And they, you know, when their neighbors were all trying to salvage food from their refrigerator and freezer, they would be drinking cold beer. And that is not the case. And, you know, the solar panels are simply not going to do it. And so people, you know, it unfortunately makes people very easy targets. And unfortunately, if people got caught up in these, and I've heard these ads on the radio also where they say, oh, cut your electric bill by up to 75%, install solar panels. And that ad is coming from the Central Power Company. And they're not telling you which solar panel company to go buy from. They're just telling that you can save 75%. And the reason the power companies promote that is because they know it will never compete with their bottom line of being the Central Power Company. They don't care if every house in their district panels their roofs with solar panels. It's not going to provide competition against the Central Power Company. So they love it. Yeah, go out and spend all your money on those solar panels because they're not going to do anything for you. In fact, in most cases, like in California, the Central Power Company controls your solar panels, and people will put them on their house. And, you know, months down the line, they're looking for the big savings from their solar panels, and they call up the power company to go, hey, we're not seeing the big savings that we're supposed to see because we put these solar panels on. And the power company goes, oh, well, we haven't turned them on yet. We haven't allowed them to produce energy onto the grid. So these solar panels are sitting up there and the people are not getting anything from that. The only thing they're getting is the bill they got to pay for the installation, etc. So that's a problem that I have to overcome when I'm talking to people. So when somebody writes in and like says, I'd like to buy a wind system for my, you know, for whatever, that's the first thing I do. Send them that questionnaire. They have to fill it out. And also, you have a lot of people that I call tire kickers. There are people that go to car dealerships and go around and drive the newest cars and that kind of thing, waste people's time, car dealership salesmen, and they have no intention of buying a car. That's just something they do. It's like an activity. It's like When certain people came to the United States in the last 20 years from foreign countries, they went to the doctor every day because they got free medical care. They went to the doctor every day, you know, and they were there every day with their kids. And you couldn't get into the medical clinic because there were lines of these people. So that was a social event for them. It was something to do. So anyway, but there are people, I call them tire kickers, in the wind industry also, in the energy industry, and they're just looking for, you know, numbers, just trying to, how much money will this cost? And the point is that there's no way I can tell somebody. Somebody goes, well, this is another thing I get. Well, one of those 10-kilowatt systems might be good enough for me. And so I write to them and I send them the questionnaire, and it has what they think has nothing to do with reality. And then they want to go, well, or they'll say, how much does a 10-kilowatt system cost? Well, a 10-kilowatt system can range from a wide range of prices, depending on all kinds of factors, And so anyway, okay, so I'm not going to belabor that anymore. But I'll make one last comment here about batteries. An on-grid system typically does not use batteries. And in a lot of places, the central power company will not let you hook anything up that has batteries because they don't want you charging your batteries from their electric power that comes from coal or nuclear or natural gas. But batteries in an off-grid scenario can be a major portion of the expense. And that's something that is a complicated world in itself. So when people write in and they want to be off-grid, they have, some people will tell me our budget is such and such. And I know that, for example, to be truly off the grid, that's not even going to buy their batteries, let alone the rest of the system. And so, and I'm nice to people, I'm not rude, but it's an education process. So I try and get to that point as soon as possible so I'm not wasting their time and, of course, not wasting my time. But the whole point of this discussion is that energy, if you're going to replace energy that comes from the grid, if you're going to replace that with equipment that you use that same amount of energy on a regular basis, that system is going to cost you a fair chunk of change. And like I was saying before, the people that are best suited to do that are people with a financial interest. Ranchers, farmers, people that are using electricity, they have an incentive to be able to get off grid if the grid goes down. And that's something too, as we move into uncharted waters in the future, as we move into the future, very unsettled times, get ready for a real roller coaster coming up in the future. This country is so divided that, but remember, that's the plan all along. But the point is that people have to become independent. You have to be independent in energy, water, food, and education. Those are the things, those are the big four. That's what I personally concentrate on in my work, in the products that I offer on my webpage, etc., is off-grid energy. That's the primary focus. I can do on-grid systems also, but I don't see much point in it. If you're going to connect to the grid, just use the grid, because when the grid goes down, you're going to be, your on-grid system is going to be down also. And it can be hooked up with a lot of other work, but basically, if you're going to depend on the grid or just have an off-grid system that's ready to go if the grid goes down, then you have a backup system that's solid. It will run 24/7, and there are ways to do that. So, but the other issue about batteries is that you can buy things that are also will save you in the cost of batteries. For example, instead of buying two or three deep battery packs, which could run you $10,000 to $20,000 or more, you spend $5,000 on a backup generator, and that kicks on if your batteries are low. If there's no wind, your batteries are low, then you have the backup generator, and you try and keep the use of that to a minimum. So if you know your batteries are running low, don't run the You would want to run your freezer, but don't run your, say, electric car charging station. Don't run your hot water heater. Don't run electric heat. Run only essential things. Don't run the TV. TVs can be a very big hog of electricity, but there are different ways to do this, and I wouldn't say cut corners, but do it more economically. But a true off-grid system is going to be one with batteries, and batteries are expensive. I have batteries that range from a few $100 up to a few thousand per battery. And so you can get the Cadillac, you can get the Mercedes-Benz batteries. I'm saying that in a figurative speech. They're not made by Mercedes-Benz. But there are batteries on the market that are $1,000, $1,200 per battery. And there are other ones that are every bit as good, I believe. But it all depends on, you know, people's tastes, and their pocketbook is a big thing. Some people, you know, expense is not an issue. But the most people today, they're trying to channel their money into a number of different outlets, especially if they're trying to move to a new place and go off the grid. But your biggest expense besides your house or house renovation, if you're going to move to the country, your biggest expense is energy. And like I say, to replace the amount of energy that you're going to use from the grid is going to cost a significant amount of money. And that's all there is to it. So, that's a topic I deal with every day, dealing with people. But I just wanted to comment as we start out this new year, this new dimension in reality, if you want to call it. Remember the old Rod Serling shows before most of your time? It was called Twilight Zone. I'm sure some of those are still on YouTube, some of those episodes. And they were very simple. They were done in black and white. And it was called The Twilight Zone. And very odd, the mind games. I guess that's what you would call them. I guess you would call them mind games that they would have and play on people. And that was some of the first real sci-fi type of television fare. I want to go through some scenarios here, because by this point, people are going, well, how much does it cost? They'd give us some numbers. And here's some basics. I have the wing generator, which goes from 2 kilowatts to 250 kilowatts. 250 kilowatts is enough to run most factories. Quite a bit of energy. And the 2 kilowatt would actually run possibly your average home. And then I have another product that I've introduced. It's called the Multiblade. They're 1 to 10 kilowatts, and they're strictly off-grid. They're more of a home quality of electronics. It's good. It's good electronics. But the wing generator is all industrial-grade electronics, so they're relatively pricey. And so I realized I was kind of leaving some customers that really didn't have enough money, I was leaving them out of an option. So I developed this other option, which I call multi-blades. And so they look like the old multi-blade, what you see out in the field, but only small, and they're only for off-grid only. So if you have a very good wind situation, which some people have, if you don't, then we don't sell wind, as I always say. We sell wind generators. But this is a viable option for somebody, and they're about half the cost in that energy range of the wing generator. And so how much do these cost? Well, you go down to the very smallest ones, they're starting out at around $4,000. And then they go up from there. They can run up to, including batteries and everything else, they can run up to $30,000-$40,000 because the batteries are expensive. But then, as far as the wing generators are concerned, once again, I'm going to repeat that it's impossible to give people a quote. People say, well, how much does a 10-kilowatt cost? Well, it depends on a lot of factors. How many batteries deep are you going to have? Are you going to have a backup generator? Are you going to have various options on the unit? Are you going to try and include solar panels that maybe you already have? All of these things are additional expenses. And so it's like, it would be like going to the car dealer. Imagine a guy, this is what I get. So imagine you're a car dealer and some guy walks in, he goes, how much does a car cost? And you, it's like the guy looks at him like, what planet are you from? You know, how much does a car cost? They're all different. They have different features. Some have better radios. Some have better wheels. Some have bigger wheels. Some have bigger engines. You know, some have, better interior. So then the guy comes in and says, how much does a car cost? Well, you'd look at him like he was crazy. So, and even a particular kind, if you come in and you say, a Jeep, how much does a Jeep Cherokee cost? Well, do you want the stripped-down version that's, has nothing on it? Okay, that's, say, $40,000. How about the Jeep that's got everything? You know, you're talking $60,000. And so anyway, it's impossible to answer the question, how much does something cost? So the thing to do is, if you're interested in energy, and you should be, then fill out the questionnaire and we'll go from there. But understand that this is not a $2,000-$3,000 investment that's going to get your house off the grid. And I feel sorry for people because I'll just give you an example. Here's an example. Very nice family. They live in a place where they have okay wind. They were in a good wind area. Then here is another factor. They live at an elevated elevation. So they were like at 5,000 foot elevation. So they're going to get 50% of the wind energy that you would get at sea level, because at 5,000 feet, the wind density, the air density, is 50% of that at sea level. So that means the amount of energy you're going to capture out of a 30 mile an hour wind is 50%. So you have to factor that in. You see how all of these things come into play? I mean, somebody goes, how much does a wind generator cost? Well, what's your elevation? If you really want to power the load that you're thinking about, you need something that's twice as big, because you're only getting 50% of the energy. If you're at sea level, then you don't have that problem. Or if you're at 1,000 or 2,000 feet above sea level, that's not a problem. You understand that you have to factor in all of these things to understand. Then you have to balance it with the amount of energy that you use. So this particular family had a barn and another second house, and then the main house, and they all had separate energy services. And I asked them what their budget was. They had budgeted $25,000. That would run an emergency backup service for their house. That's what you would get for $25,000. It would not power all of the things that they would like to keep operating, because they wanted to get off the grid. To get off and do everything they wanted to do to power the barn, the second house, which had a lower power requirement than the main house, but to do all of this would be $75,000 to $100,000. You see what I mean? So the people, that's what I say, people don't have a clear idea of what it's going to cost. And just think of it this way. How much is the central power company paying for its equipment and the coal or the nuclear fuel and all of the maintenance and the workers and everything there to provide you with your electricity that you use? People don't have any clue. So when you pay your monthly bill, part of that's going for the infrastructure, the actual physical equipment. Part of that's going for the fuel. Part of that's going for the people who are retired that worked there before and now are retired. They're on a pension plan. I mean, there's many expenses in a business, and those are real expenses. They're line items on a business account, and the customer has to pay for those. And so if you put in a home system, then the amount of money that you have to invest will probably be equivalent to what the central power company was paying for your electricity, all of the things that went into it. Because people have to do work. People have to create and design and do all of the calculation, et cetera, to put your system together. And there's things, I'll tell you another little story here about this. I've had people come to me and they say, I'd like to sell your equipment. Well, clearly I have world-class equipment, and it would be to some people's benefit to sell it and make a profit and things like that. And I get to the point and I say, you don't understand. I'm not going to teach you everything about this business and all of my equipment, which is world-class electronics designs, physical designs, the wing generators patented, all of this. And some guy is going to go out and market this and expect to make money. But here's the problem. He's not going to know how to spec out a system. There are, for example, here's an example. Impedance matching. It's something that most people, unless you're an electrician or a trained electrical engineer, you don't understand. In fact, most electricians don't understand things like, say, impedance matching. They just install the equipment they're given. They assume that it's built for the right process, that it's certified and designed properly, and they install it. So an electrician is not an electrical engineer. In the design of, say, components in the wing generator, you have what's called impedance matching. So that's a term where the output impedance of a device is the same as the input impedance of a device that connect together. If you were an electrical engineer and you were sitting there with an electrical engineer, they're probably shaking their head up and down, yes. They understand this, but could they explain that to you in a in a 1-hour lecture? No. You have to go to school for years and years to put all of these concepts together to understand something called impedance matching. And that's something I know about. I worked for 25 years as an electrical engineer designing electronics. That was part of what I did. And I did that, by the way, all the time I was doing my research, my plasma discharge comet model, going to meetings, etc. Nobody ever knew where I was working. I was working in high security locations. I worked that way because after my realization at Cornell, they go after your income. If they don't like you being in their little realm of, the attacking the dirty snowball comet model and NASA and saying bad things about government agencies, etc., they go after you. And they go after the thing they really do is they try and muddy up your name, and they go after your income. And a lot of times they'll go after your family. And so a lot of people just leave and go away and don't come back. I didn't. I stayed with it. But at any rate, the reason I'm mentioning that is because I want people to know that besides many of my other talents in many different fields, I have vast experience in building electrical hardware for the commercial market. And so at any rate, it's something that very few people have that level of experience, 25 years of understanding and working with everything from computer networks to electrical hardware that interfaces with in harsh environments and rad-hardened, radiation-hardened, things like that, telecommunications protocols, impedance matching, amongst hundreds of other things, is all something that I worked with daily. And so when I designed the wing generator and all the electronics that went with it, that I knew what I was doing. I put this together, and now there's a guy that comes along and he says, I'd like to sell your stuff. Well, buddy, I'm not going to teach you everything I know. It would be impossible. Some guy that wants to be a salesman. So internally, when somebody comes at the JMCC wing generator, fills out the questionnaire, there's a lot that has to be done to understand what their needs are, because most people don't understand electricity, let alone what their needs are. Then they want to add an electric car charging station. They want water pumps, three-phase pumps. They want to run a house. They want to run some extra utilities. Maybe they got a little hobby farm or something like that. And like I said before, you have the woman who calls in to Coast to Coast and says, well, they're developing a battery of fungus that grows in a Petri dish on an agar base, you know, and this is somehow going to power the world? What, are you going to cover the ocean with bacteria so that you can drain a little bit of electricity? I mean, it's, people don't have a clue what the concentration of energy is in a piece of coal. It's highly concentrated. All of that plant matter concentrated, and the only thing that's left is the carbon, sometimes with a lot of oil mixed in, the dirty coal. So anyway, what I'm telling you is you would have to replace that at the home level. So I'm going to jump off a little bit here because, in fact, I'm going to talk about things that have been going on over the past day in D.C. just a little bit. If you have not heard, the storming of the Capitol on Wednesday was timed exactly and was carried out by BLM and Antifa operatives dressed up like Trump supporters. It was planned the day before with the Washington, D.C. police. They have this all on film. They have the people who were the guy with the horns that got up and was got up to the microphone and was screaming in the microphone in the chamber, one of the congressional chambers, was an Antifa guy. He's been seen in the same outfit at Antifa BLM rallies over the past 6 months, the same outfit, same guy. And so that was all a staged event to try and cause problems. And now the news media, of course, is running with it. Oh, Trump supporters are violent. Look at all the violence. We have to throw Trump out. They are using every trick in the book, every news media trick. Apple has shut down, for example, its map application so people could not figure out where they are, where the other people of their group are. It's, you know, you have to understand if you're in a, say you're in a group of 50 people and you get separated, and with your cell phone, you could say, well, here's where I am and here's where you are. And you could just walk a beeline and meet up with your group. Well, Apple shut down that application. These big tech companies want Trump out of there. He's not doing their bidding. Biden, of course, is, but understand Biden's not going to be there long. Biden has real health problems, and during this whole thing, Biden has been in his basement. He has not emerged from his basement, and that's probably where he will spend even part of his presidency. But the end result is they are staging false flag events around this rally in Washington. I knew that would happen. I knew that 100% would happen. But the whole idea is that the people that want to control the United States are outside forces, and they are like a dog with a shirt in their mouth. You know, you ever see a dog, it's got a shirt and his head's going back and forth, and you're trying to get the shirt away from the dog, and the dog is just not going to let go. That's what's going on here. These people are scared. They understand that the American populace is literally rising up. And they are, you know, fed up with the COVID baloney. They're fed up with the false election baloney. It just, you know, and everything else that's going on. But if you want to know what's going to happen in the future, look at New York State or look at California, where they're passing laws. California, kids can't go to school until they're fully vaccinated, even to a private school. It's against the law. And so they also then in New York, they have a law that's being passed that says that they have a right. If they suspect that you have a medical, have even been in contact with somebody that might have maybe had COVID, they can come into your house, take you away, and put you into a happy camp, some one of their institutions that is in an undesignated location. So nobody knows where you are. Nobody knows where these camps are. And God knows they have probably plenty of facilities with empty apartment buildings, etc. You wouldn't know where these people are. And if they resist, they will be considered enemies of the state and be put on a more severe level. And this is going to turn into a political tool. And so if you're in New York State, get out of there. That's all I can tell you. But that's what's going to happen to the whole country. That is what they're heading for. And then there's going to be a new mutation that's already happening. It's already happened in UK. It's already happened in Canada, where they're saying, oh, there's a new COVID mutation that's even worse. It's even more contagious. It's, you know, more people are going to die. So we really got to lock down now. There's going to be food shortages, which is already going on. Prices of food skyrocketing and the government buying up all the food. So they're in control of the food. This is all happening, folks. I don't know if you've noted while you were, you know, hoping to get back to watching football and sending the kids to school. These people have been busy at work. And, you know, everything you see is part of a scripted plan. That's what I will tell you. So the only thing you can do is become independent. The main things you have to become independent are telecommunications, transportation, food, water, and energy. And to actually do that is very difficult. So that, unfortunately, that means that people have to get out of the city, absolutely for sure, get out of the city and then take care of yourself. I'll tell you, right now is a good time, if you're not already doing this, now is a good time to start planning for spring. Because ordering things and getting things in place, for example, the wing generators are around 10 weeks out, approximately, depending on all the options. But that's about the lead time, or 10 to 12 weeks, somewhere in there. It might be more. And then the shipping time, and those things are changing on a daily basis. So what I do is I sell solutions. I don't sell products. A product is something you buy, and it's like your cell phone. Okay, you got a cell phone. But what I sell are solutions. In other words, how do you get vegetables in your house when they're going to be skyrocketing prices someplace else? Well, I sell the grow towers. So you can have vegetables, tomatoes, and these things produce a lot of food. There was a woman that I contacted a while ago that had purchased one of the grow towers. And it was, she just had one. She said she had all her friends over to distribute the produce because she couldn't eat it all. And so that's how much these things produce. So, you know, to get two or three grow towers and start growing in your own house your vegetables, and then they're fresh. You know they're non-GMO, that they're organic, that they're, you know, they're not, they have not been sprayed with some kind of insecticide. And when you go to the store, remember, if you buy organic food, which people go, well, I eat organic. Well, let me tell you, boys and girls, that is not organic. If it crossed a state line, it's been sprayed with something that you don't want to be putting in your body. So the grocery store, all those beautiful organic green vegetables and tomatoes and everything, and apples and everything, they're probably GMO for sure. So that's the big con with organic, is that it's GMO food. You know, it's laboratory manufactured seeds, and the resulting product is, and then they say it's organic, which means today, with the way the laws have been broken down and watered down, anything can be organic. You can have human poop in Mexico, and it's, they call it organic. I'm serious. And so you don't know where your vegetables come from, but guaranteed they're going to be sprayed with something to keep them fresh looking on, until they get to your kitchen table. And that poison penetrates in through the skin of the tomato or the lettuce. It goes right into it. And, you know, people try and wash this, but it's not on the surface, believe me. It's in the plant itself. And then whatever they put in the fertilizer. So my webpage is jmccsci.com. And I'm spending this show talking rationally about what people need. You need energy. You need water. I have my water filters, etc. And, you know, the thing is, if you are not independent, just do this, a little exercise. This is what I tell people to do. Spend a weekend. Take your family for a weekend and just say, we're going to shut off the electric. We're going to shut off the water from outside. And how independent are we? And you're going to realize very quickly how much food do you have in the house? How many vegetables can you grow at your location 12 months of the year? You know, this is the situation. And if you're completely dependent on the outside, then you are completely dependent. You're not independent at all. I'll tell you something else about storage food, which I used to sell. I've sold a couple times, but I don't because everybody else is selling it, something that you can get anywhere, good storage food. But it doesn't have fresh greens. There's something about fresh greens that you need in your diet. That's why I sell the grow towers, to provide that in your diet. And so anyway, and then the last thing I want to mention is my education package. And I'm going to say this, my sale from Christmas is still on. It's 35% off, 25% off of the water filters, and 35% off of the education package, my book packages, etc. And I'm going to leave those sale prices up there because people are responding. People don't have a lot of money now, so I have to understand that and get the information out. My education science program is critical, and it's for parents. So if you're a grandparent of people, kids that are in that, you know, K-12 or university range, if you're a grandparent or a parent, invest in my education program. They're now 35% off, and people are responding to this. So I'm going to leave this sale up because I think it's so important to get this information into the hands of the public. We are living in a critical time. Absolutely critical time, so we have to concentrate on these basic issues. So, like I say, I market solutions. I don't sell products. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.